Hiring isn't just about finding someone willing to take the job. You need the right person with the right background who can move your business forward. If you want candidates who truly match what you're looking for, trust Indeed Sponsored Jobs. With Indeed Sponsored Jobs, your post stands out to quality candidates who actually fit the role. According to Indeed data, 90% are more likely to be hired and trusted by 1.6 million companies. Spend more time interviewing candidates who check all your boxes. Less stress, less time, more results. Now with Indeed Sponsored Jobs. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to help your job get the premium status it deserves at Indeed.com/podcast13. Just go to Indeed.com/podcast13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/podcast13. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Do it the right way with Indeed. Hiring isn't just about finding someone willing to take the job. You need the right person with the right background who can move your business forward. If you want candidates who truly match what you're looking for, trust Indeed Sponsored Jobs. With Indeed Sponsored Jobs, your post stands out to quality candidates who actually fit the role. According to Indeed data, 90% are more likely to be hired and trusted by 1.6 million companies. Spend more time interviewing candidates who check all your boxes. Less stress, less time, more results. Now with Indeed Sponsored Jobs. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to help your job get the premium status it deserves at Indeed.com/podcast12. Just go to Indeed.com/podcast12 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/podcast12. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Do it the right way with Indeed.
The Vox Markets Podcast.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Russ Mould, Investment Director at Stockbroker AJ Bell. You're at Russ?
Yes, very well, thank you, Justin. How are you, mate? You okay?
Good, thanks. So you're in town, in the city of London?
I'm in London. I'm in Gotham City, yes.
What's the weather like, Dick? It's been torrential.
Average.
Here.
It's snivelling.
Okay.
I think is the best I can say, but I brought a raincoat just in case.
Yeah.
But it's put it this way, it doesn't look like August. You know, it's gloomy and it's grey and it's not summer in the sense that what you would like to think of August anyway. So it's a bit dull, and I gather the weather's done for the UK retail sales numbers, which just goes to show. So, you know, they're up and down like a fiddler's elbow, largely I think due to the weather as much as anything else, though clearly we're having to think about inflation and cost pressures and the squeezes on household budgets all at the same time.
Yeah, that's it. So I was thinking, you know, these retail figures, just look at them now, and they're unbelievable. Core retail sales month and month of July down -1.4%. The forecast was -0.7%, so double, actual double. Double is bad as what we've been forecast. So, but is this good news, bad news? You know, because, you know, I mean, it is partly the weather, but surely within that, there's people tightening their belts a little bit, you know.
I think the Bank of England won't be too distressed. I mean, clearly they don't want to squeeze so hard that they tip us into a deep recession, but at the same time, in its basic form, what the Bank of England is trying to do it's going to hurt, and it's going to hurt intentionally because they're increasing mortgage bills, credit card bills, auto loan bills, so people have got less disposable income, so there's less demand, which means that demand comes back into balance with supply, which means that inflationary pressure should ease. So that's what they're trying to achieve. So although it's not nice to see, I think the Bank of England will be looking at this thinking, that's the kind of thing that we were looking for here. And again, that gives them another balancing act. We've got a Monetary Policy Committee meeting coming up in September. You had wage growth very high this week for the Bank of England to, you know, by the back, what's compared to what the Bank of England wants to see, 8.2%, inflation decelerating to 6.9, but still financial markets are expecting a rate rise to 5.5 in September, and that number to go all the way to 6 by Christmas, and then stay there for a stretch. So this is the balancing act. They're clearly, I mean, the intention is to cause pain, is to slow the economy down. Equally, they won't want to overdo it, but history would suggest their record at fine-tuning things isn't very good, and either the economy eventually runs too hot or eventually runs too cold, and you can't help but think that's what's going to happen this time as well, even if financial markets are doing their best to convince themselves that after 15 years of rampant monetary experimentation, generally pretty general fiscal policy, certainly over the last 3 years, that's all just going to go back to normal and the inflation will calmly go away and the central banks can calmly cut interest rates and there'll be no recession. I just It's a lovely idea. It just feels a bit too convenient, as we discussed last week.
Yeah, well, I say, if you look at the figures we've had out this weekend, and of course they've got, they don't have a meeting this month, but it'll be next month, so they'll have another.
They're all in Jackson Hole, Wyoming next week, aren't they? The central bank posse.
Yeah.
You're about as intrigued about that as I am, aren't you? I think if it took place in my back garden, I don't think I'd open the curtains actually. No. But there you go.
I know, but what's interesting though is of all the things we've had the retail sales down, mainly due to weather. So many factors play into this. It can't be just read as is, because there's something, oh, it's the weather that was, you know, maybe I'm back up next month. But also, like I say, you know, the inflation data was okay, but I mean, core inflation didn't come down. It's stuck at 6.9.
That's the key thing, yeah.
And wages went up. But part of me still thinks, I was listening to, I think it was a Bloomberg podcast, and a guy on that was saying, I mean, we've talked about this before, it's hard to know how long the lag is. I've heard anything from 12 months to 24 months.
Yeah,
and if you go in the middle, so 18 months. Well, they just started hiking 18 months. So if you're 18 months on the line, I can't see them holding it for this long. Because and I keep saying this, if it's coming down or it's stopped, the rise is not as aggressive, what's the harm with just stopping and pausing for a while and see what the effects are? And to say, we're going to see the data, we haven't got enough data here. I mean, it makes them sound like they don't know what they're talking about, but at least we're not convinced the data's going down as yet. We want to see, what's the harm with them just pausing? Because, I mean, you know, if you said, are you hoping to create mass jobs, mass unemployment or what? Because you don't know what's going to happen here. So I don't see why they just can't pause. What is it about central bankers that just can't say, well, we don't know yet? Let's just pause, you know?
Yeah, and I think that's in the end, I think, as you say, that what they're really trying to do is set policy for where we're going to be in 18 to 24 months' time. And, you know, they're no better necromancers or soothsayers than you or I are. They may have more data at their disposal. But equally, again, you know, if you're basing policy on backward-looking data, then you're driving the car looking in the rearview mirror, and that's going to end quite badly. So what they really need to be doing is trying to work out what's going to happen in 18 to 24 months. In the second half of this year, you've got a base effect that's going to be in your favour. You've got the fact that you have got an 18, you know, the policy is going to start to have an effect, you would think, after 18 months. Equally, you know, there's only a third of the UK households are actually funded by mortgages right now. So your target, you're squeezing quite a relatively small percentage of the population. Although I'm sure that rents will continue to go up from here, because a lot of people can't afford to buy, and which is no laughing matter at all. And that in itself will eventually lead to, you would assume, a bit of a squeeze on rents also, because landlords might be under the pump. So that possibly hasn't gone away yet. And household ownership costs are a big contributor to RPI eventually. And also one of the biggies is we don't know where the oil price is going to go. I mean, oil and gas prices coming down and energy price caps have helped the inflation numbers decelerate a lot. But since June, the oil price is up by 15-20%. And if that carries on or sticks around, then that is going to make things more difficult and more complicated again, because for all the ripple effects that we've discussed before. So there are lots of moving parts here. I wouldn't want to personally assume that inflation will just keep on gently receding. And if it does recede sharply, it's because the economy is really under the pump from those higher borrowing costs. So it is a bit of a devil in a deep blue sea job, I think. At the moment, markets seem more concerned about in the UK about inflation sticking around than they do about recession. In the US, I think they've more or less come to the conclusion that, you know, there's going to be no landing, as we discussed last week, because of fiscal pump priming. And again, if there is going to be a shock, it's going to be that inflation doesn't come down as quickly as people think. And at the moment, you know, just seeing, you know, if you're looking at, you know, the US bond market, government bond yields are still going up. And if you look at some of the products that retail investors use to maybe buy long-term bonds, like the TLT ETF, exchange traded fund, you know, have a look at the chart, Justin, but once that's gone below 100, I don't think that generally looks pretty happy with itself. So that is a genuinely worrying chart on the TLT, though, which is, I think, the 20-year plus US Treasury bonds.
So
that really doesn't look happy with itself, right? And
wow,
that's if bond prices are going down, that means bond yields are going up, right? So the bond market is definitely windy about inflation. Stock markets are pretty happy about no recession, but then maybe they're underestimating inflation stickiness, which is maybe what one of the signals that the central bankers are looking towards.
Well, since September 2020, this is down. It's down 46%.
And what yield do we reckon you were getting on US 20-year Treasuries then? Something below 1%, I would imagine, by some distance.
Yeah.
So you're owning a 20-year instrument, and you've probably just lost about 40 years worth of interest. That's not a good situation to find yourself in.
But do you think, I don't know what the central banks do, you know, what they do, what Andrew Berry does for a month in between meetings. I'm sure they're very busy looking at lots of data. Maybe they get confused by the wall, but so much data to look at. But,
go to Jackson Hole, Wyoming, I would think, next week.
Exactly. But are they paying attention to what's happening like in Germany, China? Because, of course, Germany and China are interlinked in a way. But Germany is looking awful, and China especially. I mean, China, like I said, it's amazing what China do now. Is they, if they got really bad youth unemployment, they've stopped reporting the figures.
Stop publishing the data.
As if it'll go away. It's bad. Just don't report bad stuff. Just only report good news. And they haven't got a lot of good news to report, to be honest. You know, that must play into, I mean, and even over here, if you look at, PPI, on our data, that's contracted now for 2 months in a row.
That has,
Minus 3.3%, and then before that, minus 2.9%. So it's contraction. It's not just slowing down, it's contracting. Surely, I just think, pause for a while, because in markets, like you say, a mall share, just looking at that today, it's now, if you take out the COVID dash for cash crash with everything you sold off on the scariness of the global market shutting down, take that out, but it's now at a 7-year low. And so, and the FTSE's at a recent low, FTSE 250, that's 6 days down, and it's not far off recent lows. So the markets are worrying about something, aren't they, you know?
Yeah, and the UK small caps, if you look at the major indices in the world, they're right, they are absolutely plumb down at the bottom now. And the only things that are doing nearly as badly are China and Hong Kong, which I think, again, tells us something there. I mean, China, you know, I'm getting lots of questions. What does it mean? It clearly isn't great if the world's second biggest economy is encountering a genuine property bust. And so what are the lessons there? Well, one, you know, in the end, any debt-fueled speculative bubble will go pop. You know, China's stock market did that in 2015-16. Its property market's doing it now. We saw it in Japan in the late 80s. We saw it in tech stocks here in the 1990s. We saw it in US residential property in the 2000s. In the end, that is an inherent, you know, things that are funded by debt are inherently unstable, and they will eventually go thud. And that's what's happening in China now. So what does that mean? Well, I guess the immediate worry that people have got is that if Chinese property developers stop paying their bonds, none of these Chinese investment and trust companies don't get the money in that they're expecting, so they're not paying products now to their customers. This, I'm sure I'm not pronouncing it properly, but it's spelled Zhongrong, Zhongrong. I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly. I might not be. It sounds frighteningly like gone wrong in some ways, which is probably why I am pronouncing it desperately badly incorrectly. But that is, so you're seeing some of the ripple effects there already. And I think if you did see a Chinese property slowdown, which seems likely, you would expect to see lower demand for copper and some in certain industrial metals and raw materials, which is definitely something to think about.
Evergrande has just filed for U.S.
There
bankruptcy.
There you go. Evergrande's filed for U.S. bankruptcy. Country Garden is clearly missing, you know, bond coupon. So there's clearly lots of trouble there. And what does it mean on a world trade basis? Yeah. Well, China runs a trade surplus, right? So it actually sells more than it buys. So in that respect, it isn't as bad as it sounds. And in some cases, the West isn't trying to sell China anything anyway when it comes to silicon chips and high technology equipment. So the knock-on effect there might not be as great, but in terms of raw material demand, it could be. In terms of oil, it could be. And actually, from an inflationary perspective, that's not necessarily the worst thing in the world. So it might not be the total problem that it seems. I think for the UK, Germany and Europe slowing down is a big challenge because the European Union is still a massive trading partner for us. So that is, and I think if you look at UK stocks, there's definitely been an outperformance of things that are heavily exposed to America rather than heavily exposed to Europe. And again, that comes back to the American fiscal pump priming that we discussed last week. And that's not going to stop until after at least November 2024's presidential election. So again, that sort of temptation to lean towards Europe and towards America and away from Europe is there. China, I think, could have ripples in other ways in terms of emerging market liquidity. But I think in terms of global trade flows, it might not be the total worry that perhaps we would think it might be.
Yeah, but do you know what's interesting is that indicator, like we said, the inversion of the yield curve, and
that
again can take, let's say, 18 months to 2 years for it to feed into a recession.
It's still heavily inverted in the US, particularly.
Yeah, and like I said, that inverted inverted back in July 2022. The first time I actually dipped it was in April 2022. So if you look at that 2 years, I mean, it's very right. I mean, you may see a recession is happening in next year, but in technically.
Well, I think in the US, you know, if you look at the numbers, again, I think a lot of this comes down to Bidenomics and, you know, the Inflation Reduction Act and the CHIPS Act and the money that's been poured into the economy by government. Mm. If you look at US tax payments, and let's face it, you can't avoid the IRS just like you can't avoid, you know, HMRC here. Mm. US tax returns are down year on year, which tells you that the underlying economy, in terms of the private sector, probably isn't that strong. But equally, the economy is still buzzing along. I think the Atlanta Fed GDP nowcast is saying something like annualized growth of 6% for this quarter, mm. which is just like, goodness gracious, yeah. You know, which is, you know, is pretty beefy stuff. So, but again, a lot of that basically number roughly equates to where the US annual deficit is. So again, a lot of it is government pump priming, which on the face of it, again, can't last forever, but it doesn't mean that it will stop until at least January 2025, either because, you know, the Biden team are in and they turn off the taps for a bit, or the Republicans get in and they turn off the taps even more. So, but I think, again, at the moment, America does have that sort of fiscal stimulus win that you're not necessarily seeing in a lot of other parts of the world. Yeah, I think that if China has to do something, it will, because let's face it, you have a ruling party whose legitimacy will rest upon, you know, economic contentment. You're already scrapping the youth unemployment numbers, mm. and I suspect that they will get involved in direct stimulus at some stage. And given that they have, you know, a still a big state influence, I wouldn't be surprised in the least if shareholders and bondholders lost a lot of money, but the actual housing assets were ended up in state hands and being sold off over a lengthy period of time at knockdown prices just to try and steady the. I wouldn't be surprised if that tool was used at all.
Mm-hmm. If you were Andrew Bailey, you know, what would you be doing next month? I mean, you know, would you be hiking or would you be pausing or what would you do, Russ?
It's a very difficult question. I think. I mean, in the long run, I have every belief that inflation is a bigger evil than a short term downturn and a short term recession. So I would be very, very careful, but I would be inclined just to pause for a bit just to see, given that we're now into that 18-month zone, and see what's really going on in terms of consumer spending patterns and what sense we were getting from that. I think I would, even though I'm genuinely very frightened that inflation could get out of hand, I would be tempted to pause.
Yeah. I just think, there's been a lot of criticism. What's your thoughts on what they've done so far? Are you a critic of how they've approached this?
I've got a very difficult job. But I think they were with the transitory thing. I felt was we discussed it a lot at the time, and I felt that was not accurate. And so far that's been borne out. I do worry that longer run, I actually think that to a degree, you know, if you look at the debt pile that the government has got in this country of 2.6 trillion and rising, and the debt pile you've got in the US, there are very few, you certainly can't pay it back. So there are very, very few ways out of that. You either debauch your currency or you default, which we won't do, or you inflate your way out of it. And actually, although the government, you know, particularly Jeremy Hunt's been particularly vocal in, you know, the understandable desire to say, look, inflation is an evil, it makes everybody worse off, let's crack down on it. From a government's perspective, actually, inflation, when you've got that much debt, is no bad thing, which is why I think ultimately the Bank of England may end up running fast and loose a bit more on inflation and be more worried about, forgiving there than perhaps you'd expect, and be more worried about a recession, because if you get a big recession, then that debt is really going to be a crashing burden for you. And if you think about it, in the US, we've got a near record annual budget deficit and unemployment's 4%. What on earth's going to happen to government spending and tax receipts if there's a recession in the US? Yeah. So that's going to be horrendous. So I think in that respect, my suspicion is that ultimately central banks will be inclined to play faster and looser with inflation than perhaps we all would imagine at the moment, which has, again, got substantial portfolio implications for a lot of a range of assets. And certainly means that the picture would look very different over the next 10 or 15 years than it has over the past 10 or 15 years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, it's a complex situation, and part of me thinks, you know, if you're looking out, I do think, you know, I know they're talking tough, and they say they'll hold them higher for longer. But if they see, you know, inflation coming down quite quickly, and then I don't think they'll do that if the economies are.
I don't think they will, no. Because of the debt piles, I think they're slightly boxed in there, yes.
Yeah, yeah. Well, have a nice weekend, Russ. Speak next
and
week.
You too. Hope the weather improves.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key. And that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
This fall in love with Cozy. Nothing says autumn like wrapping up in the rich, warm colors of Minky Couture. From golden ambers to deep burgundy and rustic browns, Minky blankets bring the beauty of the season right into your home. Perfect for crisp evenings, family time, or gifting someone special. Fall in love with Minky and shop your favorite fall colors today at MinkyCouture.com.
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.